Acatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome, Curious Minds. So, you've asked us to take a deep dive into Marcus Tullius Cicero's selected political speeches. And wow, the materials you sent over are quite something, a real gold mine.
They really are.
Our mission today, then, is to unpack how this ancient Roman order's powerful words can, well, still resonate with your understanding of things like principled leadership, the maybe surprising fragility of democracy, and that timeless challenge of defending our institutions through, you know, truly effective communication.
Yeah, it feels incredibly current, doesn't it? Even though it's ancient history.
Exactly. It might seem like we're reaching way, way back, but honestly, his insights feel incredibly relevant right now.
And what truly stands out to me from these sources is just how Cicero, you know, living through the actual decline of a republic, offers such a stark, almost unnervingly clear mirror to so many of the debates and, frankly, the challenges we see playing out today. He helps us grasp not just what happened back then, but critically how it happened and the absolutely central role that public discourse played in that whole unfolding drama.
Absolutely. So, okay, let's zoom in on the man himself, who was Marcus Tullius Cicero. He lived from 106 to 43 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
And his story, it's pretty fascinating. He wasn't born into one of Rome's, you know, established aristocratic families.
No.
He was what they called a novus homo, a new man.
Right. A self-made man.
Exactly. Meaning he climbed the political ladder through, well, sheer talent, intellect, and ambition.
Which was not easy back then.
Imagine. Being self-made in a world just dominated by inherited power and connections. His mastery of rhetoric, the art of persuasive speaking, that was his primary weapon.
It was his whole toolkit, really.
Yeah, his entire toolkit for navigating that incredibly complex and, let's be honest, often brutal political landscape.
And that new man status, it's absolutely crucial for understanding his unique perspective, I think.
How so?
Well, he wasn't just some academic sitting on the sidelines observing. He was a central actor right in the thick of it.
High stakes.
Incredibly high stakes. In the drama of the Roman Republic's decline, I mean, he rose to the very highest office, consul,
right,
and found himself directly confronting these huge figures, like the notoriously corrupt Governor Verus.
We'll get to him.
Oh, yeah. And the conspirator Catiline, and later, the really formidable Mark Antony.
So his authority, it comes from experience.
Exactly. It doesn't just come from theory, but from direct, hands-on political combat. He was wielding words as his sword and shield right there in the arena.
What a compelling image. Okay, so let's talk about the book you shared, Selected Political Speeches.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to sort of boil down its core message, what would you say it is?
The core message.
For me, it feels like it champions this really powerful idea that rhetoric, you know, when it's principled and skillfully used,
yes,
is the essential lifeblood of a functioning republic.
I think that's spot on. This collection really argues that the very fate of a free state is just inextricably linked to the quality of its political discourse.
How leaders talk, basically.
Well, how leaders articulate values, how they expose enemies, how they persuade citizens to act for the common good.
It's a powerful argument, isn't it? Suggesting that in times of political crisis, courageous words delivered with integrity can be even more potent than, say, military might in preserving a republic.
It's a bold claim, but he makes a strong case. This collection, it spans his career roughly 70 BCE down to 43 BCE.
Right near the end.
Right near the end. And it really takes you on this masterclass in applied political philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You journey with him from his daring early career exposing corruption through his absolute peak as consul, thwarting Catiline's conspiracy, all the way to his final, very tragic stand against Antony.
And along the way.
Well, along the way, it grapples with these incredibly timeless questions, you know. What is justice? What makes authority legitimate? How does corruption just eat away at the state?
Big stuff.
Huge stuff. Civic virtue, the role of law, the inherent fragility of democracy, and of course, the actual practical techniques of how to persuade people.
So it's not just ancient history.
Not at all. It's a profound commentary on the human struggle, really. The struggle to govern and, well, to be governed.
Okay, that brings us neatly to the speeches themselves. Let's try tracing a chronological path. It should show us both Cicero's incredible career arc
and sadly,
the Republic's gradual decline. Let's start with Pro Rocio Armero way back in 80 BCE.
His debut.
His daring debut, yeah. For context, this was a really bloody, dangerous time. The dictator Sulla had just consolidated power.
You didn't cross Sulla or his allies.
No, few dared challenge anyone connected to him. But this powerful Sullan favorite was trying to frame a man, Sextus Roscius, for murdering his own father.
Off.
Just to steal the family's valuable estates?
Yeah.
Nobody else would touch the case. Too risky.
Understandably.
But a young Cicero, only 26, bravely stepped forward. And his strategy, it was brilliant.
Awesome.
An indirect attack. He didn't dare accuse Sulla himself. That would be suicide.
Right.
Instead, he argued that corrupt individuals were actually undermining Sulla's new order.
Clever, right?
Very clever. Defending the system while attacking the abusers within it?
Exactly. He established his courage, his incredible talent, and he won a seemingly unwinnable case.
Yeah, that really set the stage, didn't it?
No.
For his next major triumph, the Inverem Orations in 70 BCE.
Against Verres.
Against Gaius Verres, yeah.
Yeah.
The notoriously corrupt governor of Sicily. This guy had spent 3 years basically plundering the province.
Extortion, theft.
Extortion, stealing priceless art. Terrible abuses of power, just awful stuff. And Cicero's strategy here was slightly different.
How?
Overwhelming factual evidence. Instead of just long, flowery speeches, he basically started calling witnesses,
yeah,
one after another.
Just laying it all out.
Laying out incredibly detailed accounts of Verres' crimes. The evidence was just so devastating.
That Verres.
Verres actually fled into exile before the trial was even finished.
Wow. Didn't even wait for the verdict.
Nope.
Just gone. In this case, it cemented Cicero as Rome's leading orator, a champion of justice against, you know, aristocratic impunity.
And the lesson for us today?
Well, it shows how ethical rhetoric, really grounded in facts, can expose corruption and hold even the most powerful people accountable.
Still vital.
Absolutely vital for modern politics, for journalism, for just keeping things honest.
Okay, then we arrive at the absolute apex. The high point of Cicero's career, 63 BCE, the famous Catilinarian Orations in Catilinum.
Yes, when he was consul.
His consul, he uncovered this massive conspiracy led by Lucius Sergius Catilina.
Catiline.
To overthrow the Republic. The plan involved arson, massacre, right in Rome. Chaos.
Pretty terrifying stuff.
And Cicero delivered 4 incredibly powerful speeches. The first oration delivered right there in the Senate with Catiline sitting there.
Imagine the tension.
Oh, yeah. It famously opens with, quo usque tandem abutere, Catilina, precedentia nostra.
How long, Catiline, will you abuse our patience? Chilling.
Absolutely. He directly attacked Catiline, laid out the conspiracy in detail, basically isolating him politically, morally, backed him into a corner, completely, forced him to flee Rome. Then he used the second and third orations to rally public support, explain what was happening.
Keeping people informed.
Crucial. And the fourth oration that was delivered back in the Senate to debate the fate of the conspirators they'd captured.
Right, the ones who didn't flee.
And here, Cicero subtly but effectively argued for the death penalty, which was hugely controversial.
Because they were Roman citizens. No trial.
Exactly. Denied Roman citizens a trial. But he presented it as this grim necessity. The only way to save the Republic.
That classic dilemma.
It really highlights that timeless dilemma for leaders in any crisis, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do you balance state security with civil liberties?
It's a tough call.
And his approach, it's kind of a blueprint for clear, factual communication in emergencies, building consensus for difficult, maybe unpopular action.
While trying to keep it legitimate.
While trying, exactly, to preserve democratic legitimacy. It's a tightrope walk.
That tension, that tightrope walk, it's explored even further in Promilone from 52 BCE.
Okay, what's the context here?
Well, by this point, Rome was really devolving. Street warfare between political gangs was becoming common.
Chaos on the streets.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And Cicero was defending his ally, Milo, who was on trial for killing a populist gang leader named Clodius in a brawl.
So, defending a killing?
Yes. And the trial itself was held under immense pressure. Soldiers everywhere. Cicero's written defense, which is what we mainly have today, it's a masterpiece of legal argument.
What did he argue?
He argued self-defense, naturally. But also, more profoundly, he argued that killing a public enemy like Clodius,
who was known for violence,
a man who used violence to subvert the Republic, could actually be seen as a patriotic service.
Wow. That's a bold argument.
It is. And it's a stark acknowledgement that the Republic's legal institutions just weren't working anymore. They couldn't contain the political violence.
So he's grappling with law, justice, violence.
In a collapsing state. Yeah. And this, for us, it shows a grim sort of field guide to political pathologies, you know.
How so?
When institutions fail, when they start to decay, that line between law and expediency gets really blurry. It's a serious warning about letting democratic guardrails just fall apart.
A chilling thought. And finally, we come to the Philippics.
The Philippics, 44-43 BCE, a series of 14 speeches.
This is Cicero the elder statesman, right? Making his last stand.
His last most passionate stand, absolutely.
Yeah.
Julius Caesar had just been assassinated.
Aide to March.
Yep. And Mark Antony was making his bid for supreme power. Cicero saw in Antony the same kind of tyrannical ambition that had, well, led to Caesar.
He saw history repeating itself.
He did. And these speeches, they are blistering. He unleashes his full rhetorical force, just exposes Antony as a public enemy, a tyrant.
A call to arms.
A direct call to arms to save the Republic one last time.
The significance here is huge, isn't it?
Though tragic.
Immense and ultimately tragic. The Philippics cost him his life. When Antony reconciled with Octavian, Caesar's heir.
They made a list.
Cicero was proscribed, hunted down, killed, and his head and hands, the very sources of his power, his speeches, were gruesomely nailed to the rostra, the speaker's platform in the Roman Forum.
A symbol.
A terrible symbolic end to free speech, and really to the Roman Republic itself. But it absolutely sealed his legacy forever.
What a story. So what does his story, his fight, ultimately teach us?
I think it teaches us that a democracy's greatest vulnerability maybe isn't external invasion.
But internal problems.
Yeah, internal erosion of civic trust. And the calculated weaponization of public discourse by its own citizens. That's often the killer.
Zooming out a bit from Cicero's own journey, his whole body of work seems to underscore this profound fragility of free institutions.
Oh, absolutely. He warned about it constantly, that Republican government requires constant vigilance, active defense against internal threats.
And history seems to back him up.
Sadly, yes. History has proven him prophetic time and again. Democracies are fragile. They require active protection, often from their own citizens.
It's a timeless commentary, then, on that struggle to govern, reminding us that democratic freedom really relies on strong, respected institutions.
Exactly. You need those guardrails.
And speaking of timelessness, Cicero's speeches are just packed with lines that really stick with you, don't they?
Oh, definitely. Memorable stuff.
Okay, let's unpack a few of them. First, that famous cry of despair from the first Catilinarian oration. O tempora, o mores.
Well, the times, oh, the customs.
Yeah. What was he getting at there?
It was his outcry against the moral decay, the complacency he saw, particularly in the Senate, seeing Catiline, a known conspirator, just sitting there brazenly among them.
Unbelievable.
It's this timeless expression of frustration, isn't it, with perceived societal deterioration, something many of us can probably relate to today when we look around.
Unfortunately, yes. And then there's that foundational principle of investigation, the question he often used.
Qui bono?
Qui bono, yeah. Meaning?
To whose benefit? Who stands to gain?
All right.
It's such a simple, logical question, but it's still absolutely vital in law, in journalism, even just in everyday problem solving.
Cuts through the noise.
Exactly. Cuts right through the noise to the heart of motive.
Okay, another powerful one, and maybe a bit dangerous too. Let the welfare of the people be the supreme law.
Salus populi suprema lex esto.
Yeah. What's the tension there?
Well, on one hand, it's the ultimate justification for emergency powers, right, in a real crisis.
Makes sense.
But on the other hand, it's a principle that can be, and definitely has been, used by autocrats to justify trampling all over individual rights.
For the good of the people.
Exactly. It embodies that profound, difficult dilemma between security and individual liberties.
Always a balancing act.
Always. And finally, a sentiment that really runs through so many of his speeches, especially against Catiline and later Antony.
The internal threat again?
Yes. The enemy is within the walls and is an enemy of our own household. Cicero's greatest fear wasn't really foreign invaders.
It was Romans turning on Rome.
Precisely. Internal decay, civil strife. This highlights the fragility of a free state, suggesting it's often destroyed from within when its own citizens turn against its founding principles.
A reminder that self-destruction is often the biggest threat.
It really is.
You know, reflecting on Cicero's fight and just the sheer power of his words, what surprised me most, I think, was the immense personal courage it must have taken.
Definitely.
Knowing that his speeches could cost him his life and eventually did.
Yeah.
Yet he pressed on with such passion, such conviction. It's a really stark reminder of what true conviction looks like. So, thinking about all this, what does it all mean for you, our listener, today?
The most valuable lesson, I think it's that democracy isn't some fixed destination we arrive at.
It's a process.
It's a difficult, perpetual, and frankly fragile argument. It's ongoing.
And its health depends on.
Its health depends entirely on the quality and, yes, the courage of its public discourse.
The way we talk to each other.
The way we talk, the way leaders communicate. And while individual heroism, like Cicero's, is definitely inspiring, the actual preservation of free institutions, at the end of the day, requires broad civic virtue. It requires engagement from everyone.
Not just the heroes.
Not just exceptional leaders, no. It's a constant active effort for all of us. And it reminds us, I think, to be vigilant about the words we choose and maybe the leaders we empower.
A powerful thought to end on.
Yeah.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekaktra Foundation.